Time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program. KMTS News heard every weekday at 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. KMTS Connections connects you to everything that matters in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Good Friday afternoon. I'm your host, Ron Milhorn, sitting in for Gabe this afternoon. And today we're talking about a very important topic, something that's on the minds of a lot of Americans, health care. And our guest this afternoon is Jim Combs, CEO and Grand River Hospital, now Grand River Health. Jim, welcome.
Welcome, Ron. Thank you.
Well, Todd, let's talk about healthcare and how some of the big changes that are in store for us. I heard your presentation a couple of weeks ago with the Rifle Chamber, and was a bit overwhelmed by the amount of information, but it's important stuff.
Yes, you know, there is a lot of change coming towards us, and in a way that healthcare reform is something of a misnomer. You know, it's really dealing more with payment reform and giving a lot of people access to the same system. There really aren't as many changes to the actual healthcare system going on as you might think.
So, okay, that's one thing we need to clear up, that it's payment reform. So, because the access has been difficult for some because it's been so difficult to pay and insurance is high. Talk about some of the changes coming forth with the Affordable Health Care Act.
So, say through the Affordable Health Care Act, there's the payment or the health care exchanges, there greater access through programs such as Medicaid, to continue to give people more access to the existing system. Something that a lot of people may not realize, if we look nationwide, you know, 12 million people who don't have access to health insurance today actually are already eligible under the Medicaid system. You know, they just haven't bothered to apply for insurance that was already eligible and open to them.
What are some of the common questions people come to you with about the healthcare and payment and so forth?
Well, the most common question is, you know, healthcare is expensive, and how can I pay for this? And that is something of a challenge to us, to everybody. You know, healthcare is one of those things that the cost has grown faster than the rest of the economy. And there are a couple of reasons why that happens. You know, if we look in many manufacturing environments, for example, you know, go back 10 years ago and a large screen TV was unaffordable for most of the population. Today, that's dropped significantly through automation, manufacturing techniques and such. A big difference with healthcare, even as we add more and more technology, so for example, you have a robot that can now do surgeries, the surgeon still has to be present, and you don't actually cut any of the cost. The technology actually adds to the cost of healthcare in many cases, rather than reducing the cost as it does in other industries.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the roots of healthcare reform.
Okay, the roots of healthcare reform really relate to two things. One, cost. The current system is unsustainable. The size of the if we solve the healthcare cost problem, we will have totally solved the government deficit problem. Not sure how to give you this on radio, you know, but imagine a pie plate, and that's the size of the healthcare reform problem. Now imagine a dime, and that's the cost of the national defense problem. So when we sit and talk about solving our national economy by making cuts to defenses, that's not very realistic. You know, you're affecting something the size of the dime, when in fact we need to affect something the size of a dinner plate or even a platter, you know, to give you that relative size difference.
Yeah. I heard former Congressman Scott McInnes last week talk about mandatory spending versus discretionary spending. And there's certain things that are discretionary, like surprisingly, the military budget and mandatory Medicare and things of that nature. Where do you see this thing going at the federal level? Are we close to running out of money?
We're beyond out of money.
Unfortunately.
You know, we've all heard a number, $16.5 trillion out there, that the federal government is in debt. It's interesting. If you plot that onto a graph over time, we're adding debt so fast that curve has gone vertical. And when you see a curve like that go vertical, nobody can add debt so at such a rate and have that be sustainable. And that's actually only a small part of the problem. If we look at the government's future obligations and take the net present value of those, and I know that's a mouthful, but many of you in the audience probably have a future obligation, a stream of future obligations called a mortgage. And if you count your mortgage balance as debt unto yourselves, you know, we're just saying the federal government ought to account for debt the same way that each of us do.
Yeah.
And if we do that, the federal deficit isn't $16 trillion, it's more like $60 trillion. You know, we're really, as a nation, bankrupt and just haven't quite realized that yet.
How does that make you feel as a CEO of a big hospital?
That's to say, it makes me feel kind of anxious for the future. You know, even with this payment reform that we have coming down the line, you know, and in many cases, the federal government, what it is paying for health care, and it's still a huge problem even at that level, in many cases, what they pay for health care actually does not cover the cost of providing that health care. And we're looking at cutting that even further. It's a huge concern coming down the line. And that's one of the problems when we look at this and we talk about, well, let's just cut costs, get it reasonable. Well, cutting those costs is somebody else's paycheck. Yeah. I don't know too many doctors or nurses that are going to come to work and do that for free every day. You know, they also have to pay for their mortgages and put food on their tables for their families as well. You know, so there's an underlying reality that makes that a little bit hard. You know, we could also balance the equation by increasing our tax rates 134%. I don't know about you.
Okay. I might need to be revived here. Oh, Lord.
That's to say, I don't know about you, but yeah. That kind of gives me a heart attack as well. Yeah. You know, that would mean our tax rates are in the neighborhood of 90%. And then you start layering on state and local taxes as well. And it's pretty evident there's not much left. And again, there's an underlying reality there. We all need to be able to pay our mortgages and put food on the table for our families.
Yeah. This was a hot political football for a couple of years. And agree or disagree, it's reality. And we've got to find a way to deal with it from the medical industry, from the insurance industry. What are some of the things we can do to make it work?
Well, and honestly, to have true health care reform, we need to address more than just the payment system. If we look at what determines how long and how well we live, you know, we like to think that we're the best here in the United States and that we have the best technology and the best systems. And but when we start comparing ourselves to others, we don't exactly stack up as number one. We're actually around 50th on the list in terms of longevity when we compare ourselves to other countries. Infant mortality, we're 34th on the list. You know, and so how do we tie this all together? If we look at the factors of what determines how long and how well we live, healthcare, you know, the delivery system only accounts for about 10% of our longevity. The biggest component accounts for 40% of our longevity, and that's something totally in control of each and every one of us, and that's our behavior. Tobacco is still, in spite of 30 years of tobacco prevention and campaigns against the poor effects of tobacco, it is still the number one cause of preventable death. If we look at alcohol and all and other recreational drugs, all of the side effects of those, movement deficit disorder, the new politically correct term for obesity, and all of the
I'm laughing. Movement deficit disorder. Are you serious?
We are, and all of the associated problems from obesity.
Translation, get off your duff and get some exercise.
Absolutely. <Yeah. laughs> But as we look at that.
I don't mean to make light of a serious situation.
No, absolutely not. But as we look at that huge snowball effect coming from obesity, you know, the number one cause for joint replacements is not because you were athletic and ran and wore out your joints when you were young. It's because of obesity, diabetes, hypertension, high blood pressure, you know, a host of ill effects that come out of that and shorten our lifespans.
Yeah. Our guest this afternoon is Jim Combs, CEO of Grand River Hospital. Is it officially Grand River Health?
Yes.
Okay. We'll scratch that out. Official. CEO of Grand River Health is our guest. We're talking about healthcare reform or payment reform. You're listening to KMTS Connections. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Good Friday afternoon. I'm Ron Milhorn, sitting in for Gabe. Our guest this afternoon, Jim Combs, CEO of Grand River Health. And the new name fits, it goes along with what we're talking about. Not, I don't know, hospital sounds daunting, and I don't like hospitals, but Grand River Health. I want to be healthy. Everybody wants to be healthy. And that's what we're talking about, health, making changes in our personal lifestyles so we don't have to dig deep into our pockets or put our, you know, get a second loan to pay for a procedure. How can we, Jim, how can we reform our health and change our lifestyle?
Also say, as we were mentioning earlier, behavior is one of the biggest determinants of our health, even over and above genetics. Genetics accounts for about 30% of our longevity. You know, unfortunately or unfortunately, we don't get to pick who our parents are. Behavior is even bigger than that because often our good behavior, a healthy diet and exercise can overcome a predisposition to heart disease or high blood pressure and really is a bigger determinant on our longevity. So what can we do as society to influence behavior and healthy behaviors? Probably the top thing that we can do as society to influence behavior is education. When we look at education, people's income levels, their healthy behaviors, those things are all so tightly tied together, it's hard to separate one from another. Mm-hmm. But yet as we look out, and I have kids in the public schools right now, and it's been very evident of the cuts that have been going on to public education. And, you know, education really is us investing in the future and a healthier future. By providing that education. And so we really are cutting that and instead investing in the healthcare, you know, in payment reform and really in many cases fixing the effects of people's unhealthy behaviors, mm-hmm. you know, knee or hip replacements as a result of obesity, cancers that may be caused by smoking or otherwise, you know, and that's a huge burden on the health system.
Yeah. And I guess it would require doctors using some discretion with their patients, depending on how well they know them, to be really honest with them. Okay, you need to make some changes here without fear of offending them. I want to save your life. I want to help you. It really has to start at that level, doesn't it?
Yeah. And that honestly is one of the most difficult conversations that our doctors have mm-hmm. with patients. Somebody comes in with, you know, knee or hip pain or other health problems, diabetes or pre-diabetic, and really trying to help that patient see the need to lose a little bit of weight. You know, we really do live in a society of instant gratification today. And mm-hmm. often, I don't know how many advertisements and things I see for the magic fix to weight loss.
Yeah.
And, you know, really not too many of those actually work.
Yeah.
You know, the formula is really pretty simple, but one that's hard to implement nonetheless. You know, really making a permanent lifestyle change and changing your eating habits and your activity levels is really the most effective way to lose weight and keep it off.
Yeah. Yeah. An extract of this pill or this bean or that, you know, berry, and watch the fat just melt away. Doesn't happen. I have to admit, I've been a sucker for some of these late night infomercials. Hey, that looks like an easy exercise. Okay, I'll do that. And I've got a closet full of stuff that doesn't fit under the bed anymore.
Well, and I'll admit I've tried a few of those too until okay, I figured out what we really had to do.
let's talk about some of the nuts and bolts of paying. Okay, let's say, okay, I'm a patient. I walk in, I say, I don't have insurance, but I've got this problem. What can I do? Are you going to turn me away, or how does that work?
You know, no. You know, there's an awful lot of programs out there to give access to care to people. Grand River Health has a lot of payment options, a lot of discounts, especially around a prompt pay discount. We discount bills 50% right off the bat if somebody is willing to work and be prompt about making that payment. You know, and that begins to make it a lot more affordable. You know, it's still expensive. It's not something you're going to get for free.
Right. I mean, doctors have to be paid. Staff has to be paid. The equipment is expensive. Medicine's expensive. But you're saying that hospitals, by and large, are willing to work with people.
Yeah. You know, different hospital systems work to different degrees.
Yeah.
That 50% number I mentioned may not be all up and down the valley, but it is what our program is, and we do offer a pretty substantial program. You know, healthcare finance gets to be one of the more complex areas that you get into, but that effectively gives our uninsured patients the very best rate that, you know, Medicare and Medicaid pay the hospitals as well. We're actually not able to discount it lower than what Medicare and Medicaid pay without causing discrimination problems for those people.
We're talking with Jim Combs, the CEO of Grand River Health in Rifle. We are blessed in this valley to have some terrific hospitals, aren't we? I mean, including yours. It's amazing the facilities we have here in Glenwood, Rifle, Aspen.
Absolutely. You know, we get together and regularly work and coordinate with all of the hospitals up and down the valley to coordinate our care to make sure that we have, you know, seamless service as we can between the different areas.
Again, we're talking about health care, reform, payment, and it doesn't have to be as daunting and frightening a prospect if you're facing a medical issue. There are many options out there, of course, great doctors up and down the valley. And again, we're talking to Jim Combs, CEO of Grand River Health. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Stay tuned. Welcome back to KMTS Connections on this Friday afternoon. I'm Ron Milhorn, sitting in for Gabe this afternoon, and talking about a very important topic, health. And we're with one of the foremost experts, Jim Combs, the CEO of Grand River Health in Rifle, one of our fine medical facilities in the valley, and glad to have you here. Jim, we've talked about a number of subjects, and we've focused quite a bit on lifestyles and getting people to change their lifestyle and to improve their life and improve their health. And one daunting statistic, and I'm part of this group, is 10,000 people. I remember you mentioned this at the talk last month, 10,000 people a day turning 65. That's right around the corner for me.
Yeah. If we sit and think, you know, the finances may improve if we just hang on for a year or two, from the federal government and such, demographics really aren't. If we look at the baby boomer population, and this started a couple of years ago, 10,000 people per day are turning 65 and becoming eligible for Medicare. One of the interesting things as we look at our healthcare expenditures and when we compare ourselves to others, up until the mid-50s, we spend about the same amount of healthcare as everybody else. And starting in our mid to late 50s, we go through the roof and we spend, 10, 20, 100 times more than what our neighbors do on healthcare. And certainly a piece of that is tied to unhealthy behaviors that we're now trying to fix as those catch up with us in our mid to late 50s.
A lot of baby boomers, like myself, grew up with, deep fried stuff. Parents, grandparents smoked, drank. You saw it on television, you saw it in movies. It was promoted. Thank God I haven't smoked. I don't drink. But there are a lot of people in my generation, my age group, that do. And it takes a real concerted effort, doesn't it, to convince people to change.
That's to say, it really does. And this is not the kind of thing that's solved overnight.
No.
Stopping smoking or losing weight are all very daunting tasks that can take a great deal of time. And that's part of why, we want to make sure and we don't short our education system and we start early so that we don't, in fact, have worse problems, 20 years from now as the new generation is coming up.
Yeah. Speaking of the new generation, we talked during the break about student-based health centers and how that's making an impact in the Valley.
Yeah, we've done some innovative things really trying to give more people and people who may not have a lot of ability to pay more access to health care. And so we do have two student-based health centers, one down in Battlement Mesa and the other in Rifle, so serving two different school districts.
How those work?
And those have worked very well. We've had an awful lot of students access those. They're able to get in, get evaluated, get treatment, whether it's strep throat or something else, and really minimize the out-of-school time. We have another program that we've been running at the hospital as well called Healthy Lifestyles, really trying to help, again, with that education piece and help people learn, what a proper portion size is or things, whether they already have diabetes or whether they just want to control their weight. Looking at that diet becomes very important and giving people some opportunity to learn, how to have a healthy diet.
Yeah. I don't know if, I don't think legislating things really helps. You see the efforts by Mayor Bloomberg in New York to, we're going to outlaw big drinks and all this other stuff. And that's not going to be effective. Again, it's got to be education and convincing people, showing them, okay, to continue with this lifestyle at your own peril.
That's what I say. And that's certainly one thing I've learned being a leader of an organization. Going out and making a mandate and saying it so really doesn't make it so. Leadership is a lot more than just making a mandate as to how things will work. It really is about education and influence and getting people to make correct choices because they want to, not because it's mandated.
Yeah. How is this being received, some of these programs and
programs? Let's just say they're being received very well. The school districts have been very pleased with the partnership and the access for both teachers and students. And actually, that's open to family members of students as well that can go and be seen and get some of their lower health care needs met.
Yeah, if you can get the kids convinced that this is the best way to go and I feel better, and get them to go home and maybe nudge mom and dad, hey, let's try this. Mom, do you really need that cigarette?
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I say. I know a number of people that have quit because when they asked their son or daughter what they wanted for Christmas, they said, "Mom, I want you to quit smoking." and that was a powerful influence Indeed. Coming from the kids.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, something that comes through education.
Yeah. I think you mentioned this, and it's been talked about before, but what's the number one health issue? What's the number one killer?
Well, the number one killer of preventable death is still tobacco.
Hmm.
I mean, we've had 30 years or more of campaigns against the health effects of tobacco, and still it is the number one cause of preventable death in this country. You know, heart disease and some other things are up there, cancers as well. But those aren't preventable the same way. You can't necessarily guess if you're going to get, you know, a particular type of cancer. But you can almost guaranteed keep yourself from getting lung cancer if you don't smoke. And that is still the number one cause of preventable death.
Yeah. I heard recently that studies show that 70 is the new 30. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And it can only be true if you're willing to make some changes.
And you know, 70 and the people that I see that are 70 and it's the new 30 and they're still active and healthy and doing things, golfing, fishing, they've had healthy behaviors for much of their life. Mm. You know, those same people that are doing those things are active. They exercise, they watch their diet, and they're enjoying life at 70 years old.
Jim, what is the great health equation?
Well, to say, you know, as we've talked about healthcare reform the last few years, the great equation is that health equals access to medical care. And that really, as we've been talking today, is not the case. The great health equation really is health equals healthy behaviors and taking care of yourself, eating right, exercising.
Does ignoring or hoping that it'll go away, a health issue, a pain, a growth somewhere that you, I can't afford it, it'll go away, does that add a greater burden to society and to the medical industry?
Absolutely. You know, if you do have a health problem or something, I mean, as we, you know, genetics is something that we can't do about. You have a growth, a tumor, a pain in your stomach or somewhere, you do need to go and get it checked out and taken care of. And there are some amazing things that have happened with the healthcare system. If we go back just, 100 years ago, your encounter with a healthcare provider was rather iffy as to whether you would benefit from that healthcare provider. 100 years ago, we were still using leeches and bleeding people. And we've come a long way since then. In the last 100 years, particularly the last 30 years or so, we've seen great advances in medicine. Age-adjusted mortality from heart disease has decreased 50%. Age-adjusted mortality from stroke has decreased 70%. You know, the medical industry that we're talking about really is the best the world has ever known today. It doesn't mean there's still not room for improvement, but it is a good system, and it has done a lot to extend our life expectancy. But we can do even more through our healthy behaviors.
Yeah. That's the big challenge, is getting people to change. And that's probably where a lot of hospitals, where the health care industry falls short. But on the bright side, we've got some of the best doctors in the world, some of the best facilities in the world, and some of the best right here in this valley. And you were talking during the break, if you have a heart attack or an emergency, you want to have it here.
Absolutely. We do have the best technology in the world. We have the best outcomes. If you have a serious accident or a heart attack, we do have the best outcomes here in the U.S. When we make those comparisons to other countries and our longevity isn't as long as theirs, you know, that's, you know, we can change that as a nation, but it takes each and every one of us getting on board and working on our healthy behaviors, focusing on education as a country, you know, investing in the future, really continuing to invest in public health. Much of our increase in longevity, 100 years ago, our life expectancy was just 49 years old. Today, it's 77 years old. A lot of that came through public health, focusing on immunizations, on cleaning up the water supply, on making food safe. You know, and that's not an area we want to stop focusing on. We certainly hear stories from time to time of things that are imported or whatever and quality control that aren't as good. That is a function of public health, and we want to make sure that we don't short that as well.
Well, we've touched on a lot of important topics. We want to remind folks that April is Health Fair Month, and there's a health fair going on every weekend during the month of April, including the 13th at Grand River Health. That's an important first step for folks. Okay, maybe I should go get checked out, blood pressure, so on and so forth. That's probably a good place to start.
And if you come to that health fair, make sure you get your labs done. That is the most important screening tool that you can do that uncovers any potential health problems. And it's very economical to do at these health fairs. It's from 7 to 11 a.m. on the 13th. Okay. Please come and get checked out if you have any concerns.
Excellent. Jim, thanks so much for coming in. Jim Combs, our guest, CEO of Grand River Health. You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program. KMTS News heard every weekday at 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. If you'd like your nonprofit organization featured here, please email KMTS at KMTS.com. With connections in the subject line. Please allow as much time as possible for scheduling. KMTS Connections, one more reason for your brand of country, KMTS. Jim, thanks so much and have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Ron. You bet.